us, the most important thing coming into this camp now is to take each and every game, game by game, not focus on saying, okay, let's get 9 points. I mean, I remember even myself, I previously said, you know, let's get 9 points in the window. Let's focus on each game and what we need to do in order to win each game. And then I think that's going to set us up for the best success.
Is underway here on ESPN Plus. Sebi Salazar, Hercules Gomez, and apparently a Tyler Adams who has learned his lesson, Herc, from the last time around.
The wise man learns from his mistakes. That's exactly what you're supposed to say. Do not give these teams bullet board material. Do not give the press a way out. Don't do it, because we will be there.
There you go. There you go. We all learn from our mistakes. Let it be so on this edition of Football Americas. Plenty coming up for you on this edition of the show. Julie Foudy is going to join us for the latest on the National Women's Soccer League. Of course, Herc, no games this past weekend in light of the sexual abuse scandal that we first learned about last week. We'll have all the latest there. We've also got an interview a little bit later in the show with Chris Richards on life in the Bundesliga. Of course, life with the U.S. men's national team as well, plus all of the good news from Major League Soccer and a weekend full of Clásicos in Liga MX, Herc. And if people don't want to look at your ugly face, they just want to hear my beautiful voice, how can they get this content, Herc?
On the podcast.
There it is, on the podcast.
Spotify, Apple, YouTube, MySpace, Hi8, whatever you guys need, we are there.
Today of all days, you better make sure
that's
that
right.
The technology
Instagram,
that you're referencing.
Instagram, WhatsApp, it was down. A lot of our production crew lost its mind, but this too shall pass.
Yeah, this show runs on WhatsApp, so whoever's dealing with that, if you could sort it out, the quicker the better for all of us involved. All right, Herc, it is, however, it's a World Cup qualifier week, right? So there's only one place to start. We got three huge World Cup qualifiers coming up for everybody in CONCACAF. Let's start with the U.S. and some big news and, frankly, some bad news here in the center of defense. First, we'll start with John Brooks, who will miss the upcoming World Cup qualifiers due to a back injury. He, of course, Herc, played in two of three games in the last go-round. This on top of the fact that Tim Ream was pulled out of camp for family reasons. Now, Ream was replaced by Walker Zimmerman. As of now, at least for the Jamaica game, looks like there won't be a replacement for Brooks. I thought Matt Miazga, who we heard from earlier on Football Americas, might have been an option to get called into camp. He won't, at least not for now. So it's not just two of...
As for now.
It's not just two of your veteran center backs, Herc, here. It's two of your left-sided center backs here that are out for Greg Berhalter. Just how big of a problem is this?
It's a big loss. It's a problem on paper. Why on paper? Because it's one of your most experienced, or actually, it's your most experienced defender. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm thinking about it, it's your most experienced player. Who else has that World Cup experience and has been successful in World Cups? Man has a World Cup goal. But if you think about it, this is a guy who in World Cup qualifiers hasn't been really performing of late. I mean, he didn't have a good performance versus Canada, came out at halftime versus Honduras. Mm. And if we want to go further than that, go back to the memory bank, do you remember that failed qualifying campaign by Jurgen Klinsmann, Bruce Arena, the U.S. men's national team for that 2018? Some of his worst performances in a U.S. men's national team jersey came in World Cup qualifying. So on paper, yes. Off of paper, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. He recently lost his position in Wolfsburg. He's no longer a starter. He's been rumored to be on the outs there. So maybe this would be a good thing for him to get healthy, one, because he doesn't look right, and two, perspective, get hungry, and go from there. And then now this is a great opportunity for the guys behind him.
All right, let's talk about those guys behind him, because it sounds to me like you're downplaying the value of experience, which I know in different parts of the field you might make that argument. For me, at center back, in center defense, that's a place where, like, being 28, being 30 there, to me, is being right in your prime. It's not in any way being old. I'll agree with you. Bad against Canada. Pulled at halftime against Honduras. But let's look at the other options there. It's Chris Richards, Miles Robinson. I mean, those guys are young. They're young. They're inexperienced.
Miles Robinson's been your best player, pretty much.
Or it's Walker Zimmerman, who wasn't actually called in initially. I mean, this is a big drop-off, especially if I'm thinking ahead to Jamaica, who's going to give you maybe the best nine to have to deal with in all of CONCACAF outside of a, if we think Raul Jimenez is in full form. Mikel Antonio is going to be a problem for any center backs.
Absolutely.
John Brooks, Tim Ream, and anybody else you bring in.
It's a big problem. On paper, it's a big drop-off, but I think you would agree the best defender for the U.S. men's national team since Gold Cup has been Miles Robinson.
Does that sound to competition?
Well, that's down to personnel that you have and the games and the opportunities that he's taken. You know, so who's to say Chris Richards, who's of the same profile, who's of the same make, who has the same build, same playing style essentially, not as aggressive, but can't come in there, slot in there, and show us that this Chris Richards and Miles Robinson partnership could be the duo of the future and present. This is a great opportunity for Chris Richards. This is a kid who's been screaming out for these opportunities. Hoffenheim last season, this is a player, and many are going to say, well, left center back, does he really play? He played over 1,000 minutes for Hoffenheim as a left center back. He's a good passing back, good vision, over long distance as well, good with his feet. It's John Brooks. John Brooks is only 28 years old. I agree with what you're saying. But this would be good for John Brooks. Let him get a breath of fresh air. Let him come up for air.
You're not just saying the nice things about Chris Richards, because we do have an exclusive interview with him later in the show. You mentioned Brooks' age. Real quick, because I don't want to spend too much more time here before we get to your dream 11 for this round of qualifiers, at least against Jamaica. Brooks at 28. Are we seeing the beginning of the end with him at the national team? If you're calling for these young guys.
I mean, look at the team age. Look at the team. The average age of this team is the youngest in World Cup qualifying. Not a CONCACAF in World Cup qualifying. It's a very young team. So, yes, Tim Ream, who's not in this picture, John Brooks, they're on notice because the youth is coming up. And you've seen with Miles Robinson, who plays at a Major League Soccer level, who's been very good, if not the best defender for Greg Berhalter this whole campaign since summer. It doesn't matter where you are. He'll give you a chance. And with this group, if you're a good player, you can come in and do your job.
All right, Herc, your homework was to pick your best 11 for the game against Jamaica. Now, this wasn't what you thought Greg Berhalter would do, right? This is what you, Hercules Gomez, would do as you look at this 27 player pool. What are we, back down to 26 now? So here is your best 11, your dream 11 against Jamaica. Okay, wow, a lot to unpack here. Matt Turner's your number one, okay. Sergiño Dest, you're trusting him in a back four. You're going Musa Adams, McKinney in midfield, and you're going Aronson, Pepe, and Weah across the top. Let's start up top, because the big question mark is no Pulisic, no Reyna. You're going Aronson Weah as your Pulisic Reyna replacements. Honestly, I love to argue with you. That's pretty hard to argue.
I mean, that's what you got, right? And that's the best of what you got right now. And Brendan Aronson, I don't think anybody in their right mind could argue Brendan Aronson, how productive he's been for both club and country. He's taken these opportunities in stride and just run with them. So he keeps getting that nod. He will be there. Whether he's starting or off the bench, this man produces. Ricardo Pepi, the nine position is such an enigma for this program, and he seems to be the hot hand right now. And after what he did in Honduras, you have to ride with him. It's ride or die with him in his home state of Texas. A little less than 200 miles of where he plies his trade in Dallas. The games will be in Austin. You go with Ricardo Pepi. There's no argument there. And then Tim Weah. Tim Weah, this message is for Tim Weah. Tim Weah's got all the makings of a great player, flashes of brilliance, but my man has played 13 games over 700 minutes with the U.S. men's national team, one goal. Back in 2018 versus Bolivia. He's got fitness issues, injuries, been in and out of lineups, in and out of different leagues, in and out of different clubs. It's his moment now. He's doing well right now in Ligue 1, He needs to do it now with the U.S. men's national team because these opportunities are few and far between.
So I'm looking at your midfield here. You're going real young. Yeah. Musa, Adams, McKinney. You're not big on experience here either, I'll point out. Okay. You're also not big on form. Like Musa, Adams, McKinney are not coming in playing particularly well, especially like a guy like Weston McKinney, who we focused a lot on because of the off-field. But if you look back at his performance this weekend for Juventus against Torino, Allegri criticizes him specifically in the post-match press conference. Yeah. I'm just saying he's not coming in hot, and you don't have a lot of experience in that midfield. Wait. Sorry, isn't this a good moment to bring in the MLS guys, to bring in a Roldan, a Legette, experience
against... He brought him in. He brought those in.
No, and no, put him in the starting lineup. If not now, when?
Don't say if not now, when, because Greg
Berhalter. Where's your experience in this team?
Listen, there is no experience on this team because they're all young, inexperienced in World Cup qualifiers. Last World Cup fixture date, listen to this. 21 different players started for Greg Berhalter. Last window, 3 games, 21 different starters. 22 made appearances. Ethan Horvat, the only player who did not make an appearance. They will play, they will start, because as we've seen, and we've seen this a bunch, Seb, Mexico, Jamaica, Costa Rica, Panama, injuries are going to happen, which is why I went with the back four. Exactly why I went with the back four. Because
even with Sergiño Dest.
Yes, yes, because, Jamaica, if I can go into Jamaica's really quickly, possession stats versus Mexico, 27% for Jamaica. Possession stats versus Panama, 39%. Possession stats versus Costa Rica, 43%. The personnel with Jamaica is all over the place. We don't know who's going to play. We don't know who's going to make the list. We don't know what it'll be. What I will tell you is they don't possess the ball, and we've spoken about this. You only trust Sergiño Dest if you know you're going to possess the ball and possess a lot. And you're in the friendly confines of Q2. In Austin, Texas, a very pro U.S. men's national team crowd on a very pristine field. No arguments from these players. I don't want to hear anything about the field. I don't want to hear about the conditions. These players, this field, this player, this opportunity. I wouldn't go 3 center backs because with the amount of injuries that we've seen, a lot of these players have been playing a lot of games. I don't know if I want to blow one of these players in it with using 3 center backs and then behind the 8 ball for their other 2 games.
So one thing we mentioned when we first flashed that 11, this was what you wanted,
correct,
what you would do, not necessarily what you think Greg Berhalter will do. One thing that you did was start Matt Turner. Do you think there's any discussion that Matt Turner is the number one for this team? Do you think there's any chance we could see someone besides Matt Turner in goal for this game against Jamaica?
Absolutely. And the only reason I put Matt Turner there is because Greg Berhalter opened that door and Matt Turner just blew it wide open. If there was a sliver of an opening, he kicked it open. Matt Turner's taken advantage of every single opportunity given to him with the U.S. men's national team. But who's the old trusted player for Greg Berhalter?
Yeah.
It's Zach Steffen. Who knows his system? Zach Steffen. Who's been that number one every single game?
But Matt Turner is the number one right now. Doesn't that create a goalie controversy for nothing?
Of course. And he did it himself. Greg Berhalter has created a goalie controversy. But credit to him. Credit to Matt Turner for making it a controversy. Credit to him for keeping that door open, slamming it wide open, and all of a sudden saying, hey, I'm here too. I don't care if I play in Major League Soccer. But Zach Steffen is Zach Steffen. He plays in the Premier League. He plays under City. And he happens to be one of the confidants of Greg Berhalter.
Big picture, Herc. What is an acceptable week for the United States? We remember last time around you said 5 points. 5 points. 1 win in 3 was good enough for the United States. And it's exactly what they delivered. This time, with not one but 2 games at home, what is an acceptable window out of 9 points for the U.S. men's national team?
My head tells me 6 is acceptable, but then I look at the road record for the U.S. men's national team against Panama. They should get 7. 7
Ooh,
is the line for them. 7
ambitious.
Is the line. Yeah, it's not ambitious. That's the line. And anything else of 6, anything less of 6, is on scary, shaky grounds for Greg Berhalter. If you drop points in these 2 home games, that's a fireable offense for you. You've now dropped 3 account home games. You drop points in 3 straight home games if you don't get these 2 wins at home.
Really? So you're saying that even these 3 games, Greg Berhalter is still managing for his job after getting the requisite 5 points in the first 3 matches of the qualifying cycle?
Yeah. Do you know why the U.S. men's national team didn't qualify last go around? It's not because they were poor on the road. It's because they were poor at home. They've always been poor on the road historically. So just because you make up points versus Honduras doesn't mean you can go out and just say, I have the luxury of losing points at home. Now, no, that's not the way it works, especially not here in CONCACAF.
Home against Jamaica and home against Costa Rica. Huge games for the tenure then of Greg Berhalter, and 2 matches that, of course, you can watch on ESPN. Herc, let's run it back. We had some big performances, especially from the crew that might have felt they were on the roster snub list. Shall we start with Joe Scally, his first Bundesliga goal? How about that, Herc?
Look at this. Where are the defenders? Where are the defenders? Joe Scally doesn't care. Look at my man. 1v1. Brooks isn't there. It would have been great to see him on the... Joe Scally. First Bundesliga goal. Hey, what are you doing? He's there. He just can't get there. Look at that. Center back can't get there. Joe Scally, nice little finish. What a campaign, by the way, for Joe Scally. Max Eberl, the CEO, sporting director of Gladbach, said on Sporting One, at the moment, he is the winner for us this season. I guess that's pretty good.
Gladbach, winners on the day, 3-1 over John Brooks and Wolfsburg. Elsewhere in the hey, don't forget about me category, Daryl Dike, game-winning goal for Orlando against DC United. That is now 3-3 for Dike.
Yeah, he didn't look right at Gold Cup. That shoulder injury definitely kept him from playing his best brand of football. He looks better now. He's on a tear. That's 4 goals, 1 assist in his last 7 games. Best form since, I don't know what, Barnsley? Best form since he went on loan, since they asked $20 million for him. That price has been going down, but more play like this, and we're going to see it go back up just as much.
Daryl Dike, getting it done. And, of course, the game winner comes against my beloved DC United.
Oh, production. Put the shades on.
Production killing me. Yeah, the shades was a nice touch. Gianluca Buzio, first goal in Serie A, Herc. You'll take it.
Especially at Calgary. It's somebody to direct battle with. A great game winner. He needed that. They needed that. They're 1-4-2, only 5 points. 1 spot above the relegation zone. But this is going to do wonders for his confidence.
1-1, the final score there against Cagliari in Serie A. Never hurts to get a little deflection. Probably would have been handball anyway, right? Gianluca Buzio then getting on the score sheet for Venezia. That's something new. This is not. Brendan Aaronson, Herc, with yet another assist for Red Bull Salzburg.
That's all my man does. That's all he does.
I mean, he scores too, bro.
He scores? Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's all he does is, as far as being productive. Do you want to give this man 5 minutes? He's going to find a way to get on the score sheet or give an assist. You want to give him a start? Yeah, he can do that too. That's all he does. He seems to be getting better. It seems to me like the Austrian League is no longer a good fit.
He's too big for the Austrian League. Is that what you're saying?
He's too big for the jersey.
Well, good. Hercules Gomez, ready to send Brendan Aaronson on to the next big thing. Speaking of, Tim Weah, one of the next big things, to Jonathan David of Canada for Lille, another CONCACAF hookup. These two love to play together.
They do. And this is what I want to see out of Tim Weah. I want to see him running that defense. I want to see him using that speed, being productive, being dangerous, causing silly errors from defenders. And what can you say about this partnership with Jonathan David and Fuego? 6 goals and 9 appearances for the Canadian.
And of course, Herc, they love the celebration. What is this? The fusion reminds me of Miguel Almirón and Joseph Martinez back in the day.
No. Don't say it reminds. What do you mean? No. Come on.
U.S. taking on Jamaica from Austin Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time coverage on ESPN2 and, of course, streaming live on the ESPN app.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Time now, Herc, to continue our coverage of the news that rocked the soccer world last week. Of course, it all began on Thursday. A report in The Athletic by Meg Linehan detailing multiple allegations of sexual coercion and misconduct against now former North Carolina Courage manager Paul Riley. He saw his contract terminated by the team and the league. Of course, Herc, that's not the only fallout. This news broke up 4 days ago. Things have happening almost on an hourly basis. We had the NWSL postponing its weekend matches, that in conjunction with the NWSL Players Association. Commissioner Lisa Baird, as well as the league's general counsel, both stepped down. The U.S. Soccer Federation, meanwhile, retained Sally Yates, the one-time acting attorney general, to lead their investigation into what happened. Lisa Baird, also out of the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors, we know to be one of the more powerful groups in all of American soccer. For more on this, then, we welcome in Julie Foudy, World Cup champion, Olympic champion with the U.S. women's national team. Julie, there's so many angles for us to hit on this, but first of all, just kind of from a personal level, you've put your entire life into women's soccer, especially women's soccer professionally in this country. How are you feeling after the last 72 hours?
It's a sad week for women's soccer, for sure. And I think, you know, the thing that we as players, and there's been a lot of discussions, obviously, amongst players of my generation as well, is the thing that keeps coming back is, you know, whether it's women's soccer, whether it's the women gymnasts, as we've heard recently, that why does it take the woman having to finally go to the press and get the story out to the media and risk so much at such a personal toll for the institution to actually act and to do the right thing? And how, as again, we've seen in other sports, does it happen where the coach gets rehired and goes back? And so those are all the questions we're asking. Those are all the questions that torment you. But it has not been a great week by any measure for women's soccer.
Julie, as part of the league's response, they've issued what they're calling their commitment to systemic transformation. I know you've had a chance to look at it. Do you think it's enough for the league to move forward kind of in the short term, regaining trust of not just players, but fans, sponsors, everybody else involved?
I think it's a lot of words. And I know from the player standpoint, they're tired of a lot of words. I mean, sure, it addresses big issues that need to be addressed. And they're going to do investigations at the league level, at the club level, to get some type of roadmap and baseline of where these teams are with their anti-harassment policies and their anti-discrimination policies and all those things you need. But the most important thing is they need action. And they need to rebuild, first and foremost with the players, a trust that they're listening to them, that it's not going to be the same old group of owners making decisions, and that there's going to be a policy and a protection, most importantly, in place for these players. And so as much as they want to tout what they're going to do, and they should talk, obviously, about the pathway forward, it's going to rely on action and who this next commissioner is and what that looks like and what changes are made in terms of leadership and culture so that you can regain that trust, most importantly, from the players, because the product, as we know, is tremendous. I mean, and the players want to be playing. This is a gift for them in terms of this is a dream. You grow up wanting to be a professional soccer player. They don't want to see that taken away from them, but they also don't want it to be a situation that's not safe. And they don't feel like there's protections in place.
Julie, obviously no games this weekend. It seems like the players in the league have a long ways to go in terms of reconciliation. Is the season in jeopardy? Does that even matter? Is there a bigger picture here?
I don't think the season is in jeopardy. I'm told the teams traveled today, so it looks like the games are going to go forward. And, you know, I've been talking to some sponsors as well who candidly think that they also believe that the product and understand that this is a wonderful league filled with inspirational players and role models that need to be highlighted. And how can they play a role in making sure that this is something that is first and foremost and evident to the fans? Because right now, obviously, you have so many fans that are angry, as they rightfully should be, so many players that are angry. And so I think this is obviously a huge reckoning moment for this league. But the fact that they're going to be playing this week is a step forward.
Julie, if we can move away from kind of the immediate fallout and go a little bit bigger picture here. One of the things that I was really taken aback by from the reporting last week was kind of we see over and over again what's referred to as a culture of silence in women's soccer. I wonder how you felt about that and if that's something that was very much a part of your experience as a professional player.
Yeah, well, you saw in the reporting that Meg Linehan did in that incredible article about how they talked about they didn't feel they could complain. They didn't feel they could bring this up because, and this is something in my day, to your point, Sebastian, you know, you felt like, oh, we don't have many chances to have a women's professional league. And so the mantra always was, you should be grateful for this and you should be thankful and you can't screw it up, because then there won't be any more owners out there that will want to come in and support women's soccer. And so you were very cognizant of that. I actually thought things had gotten better. It's very evident that they haven't in that regard, because there still is this pervasive fear that we could be the ones responsible for the end of the league. And so sadly, there's still an environment that in silence that reigns because of that fear from so many players, which needs to be absolutely addressed as well.
Julie, Paul Riley is one of multiple NWSL coaches that was recently let go amid allegations of player treatment. By my count, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's just at the NWSL level. I mean, what does this say about the overall system who keeps putting these coaches in place?
Yeah, well, it says, what do they have in place that's vetting these coaches, one. And two, I mean, again, this is an issue that they're talking about addressing that I can't believe they haven't addressed, is what kind of training are they putting these coaches through? And what kind of U.S. Center for Safe Sport does a tremendous job in trying to get to the players and the coaches in terms of training? Are they going through all that stuff? I know that's language in this new commitment, but what have they done in the past for that? And two, it highlights a huge problem, not just in women's soccer and women's sports, is there's not a pipeline for women's coaches to get through, nor are we elevating women's coaches to get through. You're seeing Richie Burke, for example, at Washington Spirit, was a youth coach that got elevated to be a professional coach. You don't see that happening with women, where they're a youth coach and then they get elevated to coach professionally. It takes a lot for a woman to break through. And so the pipeline and what we're teaching these, what we're doing in terms of helping young women be successful in this space is absolutely critical, because we're not addressing that either. And that will be another huge topic of concern going forward, which is something that we've seen for decades.
Yeah, Julie, the kind of obvious answer here seems to be just have more women in coaching. But I wonder if you feel like it might go deeper than that. And some of the instances that Herc just mentioned, Washington Spirit with Richie Burke, O.L. Rain, North Carolina Courage as well with Paul Riley. Each of those hirings, there was a red flag about those coaches, about those male coaches. And those red flags were, if not ignored, at least passed by owners who are males. Is the problem here not just that there's not enough women in coaching, but there's not enough women in front offices? And frankly, there's not enough women owners. Like, the buck has to stop with women.
Yeah, and it's something that has been a conversation for so long, Sebastian, as you know, right? In that we have to change the landscape in terms of incentivizing women to actually and people in positions of power to hire women, to get them engaged in this process, because we have to see women running these professional leagues for sure. That is going to help, but that's not the only answer. I mean, who is the adult in the room in that moment who will stand up and say, this is not right? And this is what we're seeing across so many different sports, across so many different institutions, that they protect the brand over the player. They protect the league or the company over the employee. And that has to change. They have to be bold in the moment to say, this is not right, and we need to step up and stop it. And you're not seeing that. And I'm hopeful that if we do get more women in these positions of power, that they will be bold in that moment, and that starts to change things.
Julie, as always, thank you for the time, and thank you so much for your perspective. Julie Foudy, then, with us here on Football Americas.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
All right, Herc, back to the field. Mexican national team, good weekend for Mexicans abroad. Raul Jimenez with not one but two assists as Wolves beat Newcastle United 2-1, doing all the things you talked about on this show last week, making everybody else around him look good.
That's what he is, man. He's a playmaker. I don't care what anybody says. His best attribute isn't that he's a goal scorer. He's a playmaker. He makes everybody around him good. Look at that turn. He just turned around three players, sets up the game winner there. We're going home. And he's in a good moment right now. This confidence will carry over to the national team. Look, on a dime. And then the speed, the poise, the vision. We're going home, Seb.
Both goals that he assists on fall to Hwang Hee-chan, so the partnership there is starting to look pretty good. Wolves, by the way, up to 12th in the table. Napoli, meanwhile, first in Serie A as they get another win, 2-1 over Fiorentina. Chucky Lozano with a goal. He continues his recent red-hot form.
How angry would you be if you're the goalkeeper on this Chucky Lozano goal?
Very.
Absolute blinder, double save, ridiculous one-hander, then stuff him right there, only Chucky Lozano would stuff it right back down your face. Down the throat, shelves it. Chucky Lozano in superb form, but this is what he does. He scores in bunches. No matter where he plays, the man can be productive.
Napoli with a come-from-behind win, now 7-for-7, perfect atop Serie A, and what do you know, Chucky Lozano coming in fresh. He only played 57 minutes in that match. So our first of three questions here on Football Americas are Chucky Lozano and Raul Jimenez, the hottest duo heading into CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Ooh. Herc, what do you say?
I want to revisit this one when everyone's healthy and just best duo, not hottest duo. But if we're going hottest duo right now in CONCACAF, the only other duo that I could think of that comes to mind is Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies. Okay. Honestly.
Yep.
And that is a scary duo to face. But this duo, when you talk about where they play, the level they play, what they've been doing lately, the ceiling, where they play on their national team, I think by far this is the hottest duo right here. These two, Raul Jimenez and El Chucky Lozano.
We're leaning a little bit on CV, right? Because both Lozano and Raul Jimenez, at least lately, are just getting back into form. You can't say the same about Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies. I think they are the only realistic competition for this title of the best dynamic duo in all of CONCACAF. Maybe we would say Brendan Aaronson, Ricardo Pepi if we were really stretching, but not even close.
If everybody's healthy, maybe you could throw in there a Gio Reyna, Christian Pulisic, if everyone is healthy.
I think the point here, though, is what you said is true. These guys are the best, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are the best and probably by far, which to me opens up a bigger conversation. Like, when you think about all the expectations down in Mexico, it's because of players like Chucky Lozano and Raul Jimenez. This isn't really even a question, right?
Well,
if they're firing at all cylinders, they're by far the best duo.
Can I tell you why it's a question? Because you talk about form, you talk about maybe that CV. The last time they played together was 2017 versus Costa Rica. That's 4 years ago.
Yep, that's a problem. You hope that Raul has the impact on Chucky that you mentioned last week. Maybe also that he has the impact on a guy like Tecatito, who has really struggled of late for the Mexican national team. So
yeah, I think his club situation is definitely taking a toll on him.
Yep, another player that... Then Mexico could certainly use. All right, let's focus in on the Canadian side of this Mexico showdown, because they might have the best player in all of CONCACAF, right? And that is Alphonso Davies. Can Mexico stop Alphonso Davies in this first of the three games, sir?
I don't know if anybody can stop Alphonso Davies. He's one of the most talented players in world football for his position. Like, he's fighting best in his position type of talent. In CONCACAF, he's the best field player in my mind. It's Alphonso Davies. And down that left-hand flank, he's not playing as a left back. He's playing as an attacker for Canada. And he's a menace. Let me give you some numbers. In 2020 and now, 8 games since then, all World Cup qualifiers, 4 goals, 6 assists, okay? In his 25 games that he's played for the national team, he's got 9 goals, 14 assists. This man is scary productive. And that's what shows up on the score sheet. You don't see players, defenders falling down because he breaks your ankles. You don't see all of those intangibles. You just see the end product, the goals and assists. Here's the thing, though. When we're talking about Mexico, he's only had 1 game. He's only played them once. It was the Gold Cup 2019. It didn't go well for Canada. They lost 3-1. This is a different Canadian team. A healthy Canadian team with Alfonso Davies. I don't care where they're at in the Azteca, he can hurt you.
Yeah, and he doesn't have to do it by himself, right? Because he's got forwards that can score. You got Kyle Larin. You got Jonathan David, who we've talked about. You've got Cavallini, who fans in Mexico will know well from his time down in Liga MX. I think those are all guys who can finish
Estacio,
off the chances.
Who's good in service. You've got a very good defensive team. You've got structure. And Tayshaun Buchanan.
Yep. That's the other thing to me is that it's not just Alfonso Davies. It's Tayshaun Buchanan. It's a combination of both those guys. It's the speed. I'm thinking about Mexico's backs, specifically the right backs. Jorge Sanchez, Chaka Rodriguez. Like, are those the guys that are going to shut down Alfonso Davies? How's that matchup going to go?
Well, we don't know if it'll be Alfonso Davies there or if it'll be Tayshaun Buchanan. Remember, Tayshaun Buchanan scored a beauty against Mexico down that left-hand side. Just abused, I don't even remember who was on the right back side there.
Gold Cup, and
the center back during the Gold Cup. So it's going to be by committee when you're defending a player like Alfonso Davies. But that's what you need to do because he's that special of a talent.
You had him, number one in your last CONCACAF best overall players? Is that right, Alfonso Davies?
He's the best.
Number one.
He's the best.
Best field player. Best field player because you love Keylor Navas. All right, final question, the only one that matters. What is an acceptable week for L3? What results? What out of 9 points, Herc, keeps the pressure off that man, Tata Martino?
Oh, when you put it that way, 9 points! 9 points is acceptable for L3. Where do you want to go with this? Look, you've already mentioned that they get Raul and Chucky Lozano back. So the first time ever they have everybody healthy at
and
his disposal.
Ache.
All the trimmings. You even got Funes Mori there if you'd like to use him. You've got all that. They have two home games and then away. Their away qualifier is against El Salvador that they've only lost to once since 1993. You're going to tell me that they don't have to pick up 9 points? I mean, the last time they lost was 2009. They lost a game in any game to El Salvador. 2009 in El Salvador World Cup qualifier. Tidbit for you. The coaches, Carlos de los Cobos and Javier Aguirre in 2009. That, you remember that campaign in 2009. They almost...
There you go. Yeah, if you thought 2014 was nervous, you should have seen the first half of 2009. In fact, Herc, it turned on a day at Azteca, 2-1 victory over the United States of America.
Oh, look at that.
How about
You're
that?
You're welcome.
How about that? Speaking of other Mexican victories over the United States, we had news today. Julian Araujo, FIFA announcing they have approved his one-time switch from the U.S. to Mexico, the 20-year-old right back for the LA Galaxy, represented U.S. youth national team level, the U18s, 19s, 20s, U23s, got his first senior camp with the U.S. Back in 2020, but he is now with Mexico. Herc, how big a win is this for the Mexican Federation?
It's a massive win for the Mexican Federation. It's coming off of losing Ricardo Pepi. This is the next best player right there. In their minds, a player that could generally come in, slot in, and play lots of minutes for Tata Martino. Tata Martino is very keen on the 19-year-old. When you think about right backs, it's Chaka Rodriguez, who isn't necessarily a fan favorite. And then you have Jorge Sanchez, who likewise isn't a fan favorite. Both two players are very polemic figures in that right back position for L3 for the Mexican fan base. And this is a young player, very, very fast, very comfortable on the ball. He's getting better by the day. And more than anything, I think it's a win, and it has little to do, Seb, with what's going on the field, but more off the field. Mexico L3, they have a big problem with the way they connect with Mexican-Americans here in the States. It's very easy for some in Mexico and El Tri and the Mexican Soccer Federation to sell nostalgia, to sell these tickets, to have them come out in droves. It's going to be very difficult, and we've seen it with the way they interact in their social media channels, the way they interact on Twitter, on Facebook, all these different things with these communities. There's a big break in the way they communicate with these communities. Julian Araujo is one of these players that I feel can be a pillar in the Mexican-American community, especially here in Southern California. You've seen his off-the-field work with farm workers here in Southern California. He's a good person that they just got, and it happens to be a good footballer. So I think this is a tremendous win for Mexico.
A couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, we had you do a U.S. men's national team top five right backs. Yeah. Where was that Araujo in there? I know he was in there. Where was he for you?
He was in number three.
Number three.
And if you look at it right now, Reggie Cannon, DeAndre Yedlin, Joe Scally, who can't get a call-up, I thought it was wide open. Honestly, wherever he chose, you'd have a good, legitimate shot of having some playing time.
in what might have been news, I wonder if the U.S. qualifying for the Olympics might have changed things. Not only was Julian Araujo part of that failed attempt to qualify to the most recent Olympics for the U.S., so was David Ochoa. I wonder if the U.S. goes to Tokyo and those two guys are a part of it. I wonder if now they're representing Mexico, Herc. What do you think?
Could be. Could be. But I also wonder something else. This is something we you and I have spoken about. You have David Ochoa and you have Efraín Álvarez, who have since committed, and both haven't shown up in the last call-up. So these things set trends. They set seeds. They plant seeds in the minds of future Mexican-Americans. And I'm not saying they deserve to be called up. It should be merit-based. But these are things that these players think about when making these decisions.
Busy times for Julian Araujo. His LA Galaxy involved in El Tráfico over the weekend for Major League Soccer. LA Galaxy, of course, against LAFC. A historic game there at Dignity Health Sports Park. Match finished up 1-1. Goals from Mamadou Fall. That was the opener for LAFC on 11 minutes before Grandsir got the leveler for LA Galaxy on the 19th minute. Herc, you were there. What happened to the goal fest we predicted? It finished 1-1. Come 1-1, on, man. 1-1,
but they hit the post three times. What are you talking about? What happened to the goal fest? Look at this sweet little ball by Victor Vázquez, who did not look happy when he had to come out in the second half. I thought he still had a lot left in that tank. Very sweet ball right here. A little combination play. Javier Hernandez with a little slick pass to Victor Vázquez outside of the foot. And Grandsir taking out Blackman, who, by the way, is like 7 foot tall. But this was a good game. It was honestly an entertaining game. Look at this. Go ahead, DePue. Boom. There's one off the post. My man's also like 7 foot. Here's another one. Go ahead, Cifuentes. Look at Sifu. Cusco in and out, in and out. Ginella, come on. Ginella. In boot, off the crossbar. Jonathan Bond with a slick little save here. He gets a finger on this, Seb. Yeah, you know what that means, Seb. You know what that gesture means right there.
What happened to Chicharito in this match? I thought he was real quiet down the stretch. Was something wrong with him?
No, he wasn't real quiet. He was making a lot of noise. He was really angry with his teammates. He was definitely frustrated. A lot of that frustration, I think is justified. There was zero to no service. The one chance he did have was a very quick play that he made the most of in the second half, in the first half. But very, very limited service for the Mexican international. Well, ex-international, excuse me.
Galaxy sixth in the West, 2 points away from being out of the playoffs. LAFC ninth in the West, 4 points back of the last playoff spot. Minnesota sits there now and has a game in hand on LAFC. The standings tell us no. Did this tie serve either of these two teams, sir?
No, absolutely not. No.
Who's worse off for it?
It's LAFC. But if you had to say, like, well, it's a tie on the road versus, you know, your biggest rival, this should serve LAFC, you would think so. But no, the reality is no. If you look at it, 5th and 10th place in the Western Conference are separated by 6 points. That's how tight it is. So in the playoff picture, Real Salt Lake, the Galaxy, Minnesota United, Vancouver Whitecaps, LAFC, and San Jose. So it's very crowded, congested field right there, and this certainly did them no favors. So they put themselves behind the eight ball, both teams.
Let me get yes, no's for you, okay? Like I mentioned, we're 28 games in. Uh-oh. We got Galaxy 6, LAFC 9th. Are LAFC going to make the playoffs, yes or no?
No.
Are the LA Galaxy going to make the playoffs, yes or no?
Yes.
Wow, and someone's not very convinced, but we'll leave it there for now. Plenty more to discuss from the Major League Soccer weekend. Let's do a quick edition of the good, bad, and the ugly. Herc clearly had his say in the production meeting. The good is once again the Seattle Sounders, who rolled Colorado, Herc, 3-0 in a matchup of two of the top three teams
in
the Western Conference. They snapped Colorado's 12-game unbeaten streak, Herc.
Is this rolled because Christian Roldan with the fourth straight game? Fourth straight game that he scores a goal. How about this? Let's come out playing right here. Atencio back. Go ahead, Xavi. To João Paulo. Keep playing, my friend. In and out to Roldan. Medranda. Give it. Switch it. Come on, let's keep going. Come on. You could do it. Freddy Montero. Be patient with it. Come with it. You go. I take. Look at this. They're walking. Colorado's walking. They have no idea what's going on. They're chasing shadows. Can somebody get a hold of this? João Paulo. Do you want to do something? João Paulo, outside of the left foot, to Medranda, and then go ahead, Medranda.
Was that on purpose?
No, it wasn't. There's no chance that's on purpose. It doesn't take away from the absolute just ridiculous goal. Colorado is just chasing shadows. By the way, two games in hand. Two games in hand. If they win them, they get to 60 points. Right now, New England is 65. I'm not saying, but I am just saying, watch out. Support a shield.
Ganando, goleando, gustando. That's your Seattle Sounders, first in the Western Conference. The bad Columbus Crew, a 3-0 loss, Herc to Philly. What happened to all that momentum from the Campeones Cup?
What? He said he wanted to win trophies. He just didn't say when. Look, Campeones Cup, the prestigious Campeones Cup trophy, that's one trophy. He'll get the next one. You know better than this. Caleb Porter teams don't make the playoffs 2 years in a row. Why? That's a great question. But plenty of different teams, same outcome. No repeat playoff performances. It was fun while it lasted, Caleb Porter. It was fun while it lasted, Columbus. Campeones Cup, oh, you remember that, Seb? You were there.
Yep.
That was fun.
Yep. Crew never really in this one, man. Philly played with 10 for the last half hour. Still nothing from Columbus, who now find themselves her 10th in the Eastern Conference, 6 points out. I'm guessing in a yes-no on will Crew make the playoffs, you're going no?
Yeah, I'm going no. Do you want to, so six more games for the next six. Well, they've watched five. Inter Miami, Nashville, Red Bulls, Orlando, and your DC. Not looking good.
The ugly, this should have been beautiful. Landon Donovan, honored with a statue outside Dignity Health Sports Park. The only problem, Herc, the face on that statue. What did they do to your boy Landon here?
Yeah, I don't know what it is with the people who make statues. They just, like, they can't get it right. Is it that difficult? Like, he's not the only one that's been statuefied, this has been done to. Lots of greats. And by the way, if somebody deserved a statue for the LA Galaxy. Forgive me, David Beckham. You should not have been the first. It should have been Landon Donovan. Landon Donovan could have three statues, if I'm being honest here. You could have one for the San Jose Earthquakes. You could have one for the LA Galaxy and U.S. Soccer.
For me, it's the wrinkles on the face, Herc. The wrinkles on the face. What, like, what's happening to his face there? Landon Donovan's face never once looked like that. He looks like he's 25 now. That looks like the face of a wrinkled 65-year-old man, my goodness. I will say this, it's still cool by the LA Galaxy. We always complain that MLS teams don't honor their history as much as they should.
LA does a great job.
I'm in DC. No, few people have more history in DC. We don't have any statues. So I love this from the LA Galaxy.
I do as well. Who are you taking here? Which statue are you taking?
Between what? Between Ronaldo and Landon? For which one's better or which one's worse?
Which one is worse?
No, the Ronaldo one, they had to like melt down and like redo it, right? I think that one's just a little bit
Ronaldo's
worse.
Ronaldo's worse. They actually, and Landon said it so himself, they did him a favor. They added more sod to the pitch there. So.
All right, so we're giving a solid trip in to the trophy maker here, or the statue maker. Let's do a drip in or trip in now for the Chicago Fire's second attempt, Herc. Take two at a new crest. Is it dripping or is it tripping?
I'm going to give it a dripping. Dripping, dripping, dripping. But let me just be clear. It looks like a Paw Patrol shield, a logo. I am a father Paw Patrol. This is what it looks like, but I will give them credit. I will give credit to Joe Mansueto, the owner. The Chicago Fire got it wrong the first rebound. Terribly wrong. What did they do well? They listened to the people. And they came up with this with the people. So I commend them for it. They spent lots of money in the first one. I don't know why you owners keep going with consulting firms. You got it wrong, but you did the right thing and went to the people and you got it right in the second go around. I'm not thrilled with the logo. It looks like a Paw Patrol logo to me, but whatever.
Yep. Looks like the Chicago Red Stars colors, themes of the city of Chicago there. I like it. I give it a much improvement over whatever that old Denver Nuggets looking thing was. MLS back on October 17th. Herc, we got to wait for the international break. But when it returns in style. The New York Derby, New York Red Bulls against New York City FC on ESPN. Hey, speaking of rivalries, El Clásico Tapatío down in Mexico over the weekend. Atlas defeating Chivas 1-0 in a game that was, how do I say, full of incidents and full of red cards too. In fact, Chivas reduced to not 10 Herc, but 9 men in the opening half hour of this game. Let's just start right there with the expulsions. Were Atlas deserving winners on this night, or were they simply beneficiaries of poor officiating?
Yeah, I think they were beneficiaries of poor officiating, because even when they were up 2 men, with an hour to go, they played a certain brand that you would say, wait a second, who's up a man here? Who's up two men here? It wasn't indicative of a team who was in second place in Liga MX at the moment. The benefactors of poor officiating, without a doubt.
Should there have been more expansions there on the fracas back and forth?
Hey, you want to? This is what happened versus America, and then we were like, hey, you need a red card them. They didn't red card them. This is why you see the red card here in this go around. It's a little bit of compensation.
Hey, we'll spend a lot of time talking about Chivas. Should we give Atlas some love here? They're second in the table after this result. Are they for real?
Yeah, I think Atlas is real. They're the best defense in all of Mexico, all of Liga MX. They may have played a poor hour against Chivas, but they did what they needed to do to win this game. Diego Coca and this team, the Orlegi Sports Group, they've done a wonderful job with this dormant giant of a fan base. This fan base is massive. We already talked about 70 plus years without a trophy. This would be incredible for them.
Three games then under Marcelo Michel Leaño, the new interim manager for Chivas. 1 point, Herc, 1 point out of nine for Chivas. And that football vibrante that we were promised, yeah, we're still still waiting on the first
zero goals
goal. So, given everything that we've seen from Leaño so far, I know it's only three matches. Do you think he should stay till the end of the season?
This is what I don't understand, and I'm trying to grasp the media, the Mexican media, with this. They want to out Michel Leaño because he challenges them, because he talks to them. We're gonna shut mouths. We're gonna show all you people. And
is
then
that why they want him out, or do they want him out because Chivas has not scored in three matches?
He's an interim manager. He's not the permanent manager. He's who will be there in place until they find the permanent manager. Well, interim, not permanent. Okay, we're not talking about the newly minted, newly signed manager for Chivas. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the caretaker for the time being.
Aren't we supposed to, even whether it's a caretaker, whether it's interim, whoever it is, aren't we supposed to see some type of bump after a new manager? If this is the bump, oh, forget it. What's coming with
some
the crash?
Some type of bump? What are we doing? Seb, this is why he's here, because they're looking for the new manager. This is what I don't understand. People want to be like, he doesn't deserve to be there, because look how he's playing. What are you going to do, go to a second interim manager? Where are you going to go? They have no money. You're going to go further down the well? You didn't go to the academy coach? You didn't go hire somebody before you really hire somebody?
Look, they're 11th right now in the table, Herc. They're in the positions of repechaje. Liga MX is so forgiving that they can still make the playoffs and still make a run. I mean, are you effectively saying that Chivas should just punch on the season, keep going under Leaño, keep not scoring goals, keep not winning games?
I'm saying
Chivas,
hurry up.
The great Chivas is going to quit.
The great Chivas? Seb, you've heard me say how many different managers they've had since Matias Almeida, before Matias Almeida. How many championships they have in the last two decades? Are we really going to demand that much from Chivas just because they are a popular team? No,
so, in every history of the Vergara family, we have them being a quick hook with coaches. But now, with a manager with no experience and no success in his first three matches and a postseason to chase and potentially play for, you're going to tell me Amaury Vergara is just going to say, you know what? Now I found my patience.
No,
or is there something more?
Patience.
Is there more going on here?
That's why Victor Manuel Vucetich is gone. But there seems to be a lot of different rumors about why he chose this interim manager, Michel Leaño, who doesn't really have a soccer background. He came from the Leaño family, a very wealthy family in Mexico, in Guadalajara, who are actually owners of Estudiantes Tecos. And he found himself wanting to coach in the lower divisions, and he became an academy director, and he's in place right now. But there is no money right now to get who all the fans want. And by the way, the one the fans want is sitting in San Jose, and that's a no-go. So until they find the right money and the right candidate, it's Michel Leaño.
So there are plenty, Herc, of problems at Chivas. Ownership, down to the manager. We should probably also acknowledge the players as well. And the players are right now coming under a little bit more heat than usual after a defeat, after a defeat in El Clásico Tapatío, because of a video that came out of the Chivas dressing room. This is the goalie, Raúl Gudiño, and Alexis Vega after the match. We'll break it down after we listen in.
Se salvaron, Fer, la neta, güey. Porque pues nomás con dos jugadores menos pudieron
se
ni
salvaron,
de
penal. Hijos de su...
Se salvaron, Fer, la neta, güey. Porque pues nomás con dos jugadores menos pudieron
se
ni de
salvaron,
penal.
Hijos de su...
So you saw the translation there. You heard the beep. Is this video something, nothing, or everything, Herc? Effectively, it's Chivas players saying, hey, even with 9 players, they had to get lucky to beat us. Kind of making excuses in the aftermath of what is a significant defeat, if for nobody else than Chivas fans. They just lost to their bitter rivals.
Okay, context to the video. Okay, Gudiño's talking to a buddy of his, and in the video, who he sent a message to, the video gets, somehow goes viral, somehow circulates. This is everything but for Gudiño. Find better friends. Find better friends. You and I know, I and this production crew know, some things are sacred. These conversations are sacred. You and I say things in jest, say things in a private moment.
In WhatsApp? It never leaves the WhatsApp group.
It never should leave the WhatsApp group. This left the group. This is everything because you need to find better friends.
It's not a maybe sign of more of the indiscipline, Herc,
no,
that has...
No, Sav.
Are we grasping at straws? Sav. Are we connecting dots?
By the way, he's also not wrong. Atlas did get lucky that they were playing with 2 more men, because even with 2 men more, Chivas was going at him, taking it to him, and it could have been a different story.
So I get what you're saying about better friends, but what about being better professionals? Like...
But he's saying this in a private matter. Like, being a better professional is when you're in a public setting.
This is
two
experienced key players for Chivas.
Seb,
shouldn't they know better?
Seb, you and I, after this show, will most likely talk. And the things you say, I will never share with anybody. I will never, because they could get you in trouble. This was two friends having a conversation. Oh, supposed friends having a conversation. And it got out. And all he said, by the way, was... And it wasn't even a friend, it was the other guy, that they got lucky. They did get lucky.
I am innocent, and I do hope that WhatsApp, in all their troubles today, deleted everything from the past.
Your secrets are safe with me, my friend.
Now that I know that Herc is ready to share everything with the world. All right, another big clásico in Mexico over the weekend. Club América and Pumas, a Mexico City derby, if you will. Club América winning this game 2-0, Herc. Very comfortable. Very, for an America team that doesn't make a lot of things look comfortable, I will admit.
Well, no, but they win. They win. I mean, it was comfortable. What a golazo. It was comfortable, but it was what they normally do. 2-0. That's their most frequent scoreline. And if I'm looking at Pumas is comfortably used to losing. They're second to last place, only in front of Club Tijuana. So this is about as normal as it gets.
Is there anything else to say about Pumas here? Like, I feel like we're just, like,
Beating a wounded animal.
Yeah. Like, at this point, it's the same story over and over again. They're just not good enough.
No, they're not good enough. You know what's crazy? It's Gabby Torres, a few weeks ago, had his contract rescinded because of poor play. They're talking about rescinding more players because of poor play.
Can we just say that? Gabby Torres is playing for Pumas.
He was playing for Pumas.
That same Gabby Torres that didn't cut it in MLS.
Yeah, he was playing for Pumas.
Yes.
He got his contract rescinded, but they should be rescinding some of these directivos, some of these sporting directors, some of these ownership groups in Liga MX. That's what they should be doing because they choose these players.
America with a... late goal. I mean, they did have to wait until the almost last minute of stoppage time to get the winner from Mauro Linus. So maybe not as comfortable as it felt, but it really never felt like Pumas were going to challenge America throughout this match.
No, never. And it's same old story for Pumas. I almost feel bad for Pumas. This is one of the original Big Four teams in Liga MX. A massive fan base. Just no money, no resources, no interest from the university that backs them or the ownership groups or the sporting directors that keep being funneled in or the way they go about signing players, no rhyme or rhythm. It's a sad situation.
Are Pumas closer to being the worst team in Mexico or America closer to being the best?
America's closer to being the best. Because there's still some teams that are very much down that totem pole. Pumas goes up and down. They'll have a mid-table season, then they'll go back down to a relegation battle season, and then everyone.
Oh, so you don't think the problems at Pumas are that bad? They're going to be back next season.
No. You asked who is closer. Is it America being the best or Pumas being the worst? I think America's consistently in those first 3 places. And if we look under Solari. I mean, last season, for all those questions, we talk about the big earners, the big spenders in Liga MX, your Monterrey, your Tigres, your Cruz Azul, even your Santos, if you will, there. America, who doesn't spend as much, who all of a sudden has their wallet closed up a little, last season, they were still there. And if not for that game they lost outside on, well, I should say the table, to Atlas for an ineligible player, they would have been the best regular season team against versus a historic Cruz Azul team. So I would have to say, especially with what Solari's done this season, regardless of who they played, he's taken advantage of the moments, taken advantage of the points. They're the best regular season team to this moment, to this date. It has to be Club America.
Yeah, I mean, would you also say that the huge advantage has to be in managerial, in the manager category as well, Solari over Lilini?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, player personnel, I think, is the biggest one.
Look at you, look at you. Now, there it is. Hercules Gomez, finally, we found it for the first time ever here on Fútbol Amigas, blames the players.
Sebastián Córdoba can't get off the bench for América, you know, and he'd be a star at Pumas.
Right. All right, one more thing out of Liga MX. Say you got CONCACAF of sorts. Herc, we just see more and more people getting involved here. This is, okay, so Cholos doesn't have a coach. You can't find a replacement. So you got to bring in the sporting director. I mean, what's next? The janitor, the chef? Like, what more could go wrong at Cholos? The only team worse than Pumas, Cholos.
Yeah, Ignacio Palau, the sporting director, the one constant of the dozens of coaches who have been there and gotten fired, and the hundreds of players that haven't panned out. The one constant, there he is. And now he's at the coach.
You got CONCACAF. There it is. Cholos down again.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Joins us now on Fútbol Américas. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We had an All-American matchup in the Bundesliga as you guys faced off against Wolfsburg. Just how big a win was that for Hoffenheim, the 3-1?
Yeah, it was a really big win. Wolfsburg was undefeated this year, and so to be able to get a win and also to be able to beat a national team teammate is also very nice. I think it's going to give us good momentum going into the next game.
What's it like when you stare across the line in the Bundesliga and it's a guy you know from other national team camps, you know, you've watched the national team a long time, it's John Brooks. What's that battle like?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's one of your friends and one of your national team teammates, but then you kind of have to turn that off when you're on the field. But you know, something that before the game and after the game you laugh about, but then on the field you kind of got to take friendships aside and just play your game.
What's it like having so many other Americans in the Bundesliga? It really feels like you guys are kind of taking over the league. For a young guy, is that important for you?
Yeah, definitely. No, I think it's a good league for us to develop in, and clearly it's been proven with the likes of Weston and Christian. And so yeah, I think that it's really something that it's really refreshing, and hopefully we get more guys over here and we're able to just keep developing.
But you notched an assist in this match. Now, on our show, we had quite a bit of a discussion of how much of an assist it was. Like, how much hair did you actually get on it? Walk us through the play. Do you deserve credit for the assist?
I feel like I do. I mean, I think it kind of comes with the hair, is being able to get a few so-called assists. So, now I think I got up pretty well, deflected the ball just enough to be in the right place. So, I'd count that as an assist in my book.
You weren't part of the last call-up group. Obviously, you were going through kind of a decision, right? With the transfer window, were you going to stay at Bayern, or you going to end up at Hoffenheim? How difficult was it to be a part away from the national team when they start this qualification process? And you got to watch these like huge games in the middle of the night from afar.
Yeah, I mean, of course it's tough because, you know, you want to be there. And so, you know, watching them, you know that, you know, they play well, and of course, you love to see them succeed, but then you also wish that you were that person who was there helping them succeed. And so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard for your head because, like you said, you're staying up all night watching these games, and then you're kind of fighting yourself because you wanted to be there. But also, I think I made the right decision with figuring out my decision on the club level first.
There's a few of you guys that kind of fell into that category last time, and we've talked to a few of them on the show, Matt Miazga, Matthew Hoppe, who were kind of like in the end of the transfer window as the World Cup qualifying cycle started. Is it really important for you to like be on the ground in Germany or in Europe during that time? Because I mean, I'd imagine missing those World Cup qualifiers, as you just mentioned, is tough. So is it really that critical for you guys to be there in those final moments of the transfer window?
Yeah, I think for me, it was definitely very important for me to be here. I guess the way that my situation kind of played out, it was a deadline day thing that happened. And so moving my stuff, kind of just had to get a new car, things like that. And kind of just showing the club that I put so much effort into you and trust and promise into you, and just kind of repaying them with being there and getting a few days of training in, even though I had to miss those games. I think it would help get me acclimated here again and just kind of get ready for the next camp.
Walk us through the decision. You've been on loan at Hoffenheim before. You go back to Bayern Munich. You know, you even played in a match this season for Bayern Munich, probably thinking about competing for minutes there. How do you come to the conclusion that, you know what, right now Hoffenheim's the place for me to be, but also it's worth noting, like, long-term, you did sign an extension with Bayern, right? So you kind of, in some way, have the future at Bayern and the present at Hoffenheim.
Yeah, you know, at a club like Bayern, you kind of want to give yourself as many chances as possible to succeed, and I think that's what I was trying to do. You know, I was hopefully fighting for a spot, but then when it came down to it, you know, the center backs that they have, of course, are world class, and also, you know, we have four or five center backs there, so I feel like I would have just kind of gotten lost in the shuffle for the season. And so Hoffenheim, they'd always fought for me. We stayed in contact throughout the summer, and you know, they told me that they wanted me to come back and, you know, just continue off where I left off last season. And so, you know, I loved what they offered. I loved the philosophy that we have here. And so I decided to take them up on the offer and, you know, just pay them back for the last 6 months.
Look, a lot of guys, you know, they always tell you, you got to take care of business at club before anything comes to the international level. But you mentioned it. Like, how often do you think about World Cup, about national team, about 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a soccer player, you know, I think it's always in the back of your mind, especially when a World Cup year is coming up, that, you know, you want to, I think everyone's dream is to play in a World Cup. And I think if a soccer player said it's not their dream, they're lying to you, because you know, it's the biggest thing ever. And so even though, like I said, I'm a young center back, I think that if I take care of business here, that when it comes to those tough decisions on who's going to the World Cup and who's playing in these games, I think that I definitely have a good chance of being in that conversation.
Big picture question here, Chris. And we asked this to, like, pretty much everybody who's in Europe that's come on our shows. What's it like being an American in Europe?
Yeah, I think honestly it was a little bit harder because you kind of already have this, notion on Americans that, you know, we're lazy, we don't do this, we don't do that. And then, so I feel like you're already one step underneath when you first get here. But I think, you know, once they see that you can play, I think it helps gain respect, not just for yourself, but also for other Americans who are coming through afterwards. I think guys like Christian and Weston, those two guys, they helped kind of change the narrative on Americans here in Germany or in Europe in general. And so, you know, they kind of come in like, oh, you know, Americans are this and that. And then when they realize that, you know, we're just as good as any European, South American, African player, that, you know, I think they start to realize that, you know, we can also play.
You mentioned Christian Pulisic. It's kind of a weird question because he's a teammate of yours, like by age, almost a contemporary, and yet he is such a kind of like trailblazer in this moment for American players. Like, what does it mean to you when you see Christian Pulisic? I guess when you were younger, breaking through in the Bundesliga, and now that you're in the Bundesliga, you can turn and you can see him winning the Champions League.
Yeah, you know, I think he's still a trailblazer. You know, he's gone to the Premier League, he's won a Champions League now, and he wasn't just one of those guys who were just chilling on the bench. I mean, he came in and he played his game. So, I think, you know, as a kid, you're watching TV, you're like, wow, this kid is, he's tearing up the Bundesliga, he's tearing up the Premier League, and then you realize that he's only a year older than you, and you're like, oh, well, I got a lot of work to do. And, you know, even though it's really cool to see, I think it just motivates us to go even harder.
You're an 18-year-old kid. You haven't even played, like, first-team MLS minutes. Like, what are those first training sessions at Bayern like?
It's crazy. It's honestly kind of mind-blowing. You look across the field, and you see guys like Ayn Robin, Frank Ribery, David Alaba, Sandro Wagner, players like that, and you're like, now, these are guys that you've watched your whole life, and then you also play video games with them, and you know, now you see them, they're on the field with you, and their locker right next to you. It's pretty impressive.
What do you say to them? Do you say, hey, you know, I've watched you growing up, or is that kind of like not the cool thing to say because you make them feel old? Do you tell them you played with them in FIFA? Like, how are those interactions?
It's kind of like, you don't want to be a fanboy, but then also, like, you kind of can't help yourself. And so I'm sitting on the locker right next to David Alaba's, which it was free at that time. And I look over to him, like, you know, my best friend, he says that you're his role model. Can you take a video for me really quick and just say, hi, I'm David Alaba? And like, he was like, yeah, bro, no problem. Like, they're all down to earth guys, but you also don't want to be that one new kid who's like, oh, like, no, I look up to you. And yeah, you just don't want to make it awkward, but no, they all understand it.
Was there a moment in training, maybe it's a matchup, maybe it's a player, that you said, wow, like, this is a whole nother level? I don't know who it was that you might have been facing up one-on-one with, but was there an early moment there that kind of you said, okay, welcome not just to the Bundesliga, welcome not just to Europe, welcome to Bayern Munich?
It had to have been Ayn Robin. I mean, you hear about his left foot, and then you see it in person, and you're playing against it. And I remember he beat a defender, and you know, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go try to block this goal. And so he shot the ball, and I was on the goal line, and I headed it up, and I swear to you, I just, like, I could not see anything for like a minute. I mean, it was the hardest shot I've ever seen in my life, and I just headed it, and it was, I mean, everyone was like clapping, like, good job, but also it was a crazy moment, and you realize how good his left foot is at that point.
Julian Nagelsmann said of you that you are, let me get the quote right, incredibly good in one-on-one defense. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from basketball. You know, my dad said growing up, I guess getting beat one-on-one is, or just playing one-on-one defense is like you're, you know, just having pride for yourself. And, you know, you never want to get beat. And I think that just, like I said, it comes from that kind of basketball mentality that you never want, you know, your player to score. And it's more costly on the soccer field. And so you realize that, you know, in 1v1, if you get beat, usually they're right in on goal. And so you kind of just learn that, you know, it's a matter of pride and that you don't want to get beat.
All right, Herc, probably worth noting we taped those interviews, especially that one with Chris Richards, last week before the rosters dropped. Any quick takeaways from the chat?
Everything about how what he does today impacts future Americans in Europe. I love that. He's playing not only for himself, but future generations.
Yeah, worth noting, he's at Hoffenheim right now, but his future may still be at Bayern. He has signed an extension, and Julian Nagelsmann, according to a report from Roger Gonzalez of CBS Sports, was the person who said no when there were multiple Premier League offers for Chris Richards over the last summer. So very interesting to see what happens to Chris Richards, not just this season, not just this international window, but moving forward with the club like Bayern Munich. All right, look, Herc, scheduling announcer. What a beautiful shirt, El Mexico. Incredible stuff from you on the wardrobe front. Scheduling announcement, not back on Thursday. Of course, that's a big game, Jamaica against the U.S. We are back on Friday with all the reaction to the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
We'll find
someone else.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.